Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 26. We're going to scroll back to verse 13. We were right in the middle of the story of where David spares King Saul a second time. We're in this period of time at the end of Saul's reign, shortly before David becomes king. David is on the run because Saul is trying to kill him. David has actually spared his life in a cave somewhere near En-Gedi a few months earlier, and Saul had in that interchange acknowledged that he was in the wrong. But here we are again, King Saul chasing David, trying to kill him. This time, though, God puts to sleep the entire military encampment of King Saul. And we're told that by the prophetic writer of this part of 1 Samuel. And David is able to get right into the center of the encampment where Saul is asleep. He's got his spear in the ground right next to his head, and he's got his little canteen of water. David has no intention of killing him, but David's nephew wants to do it for him. Basically says, I can stab him once with his own spear, and it'll be over with. It'll be done. But David's response is no. If anyone's going to take out the Lord's anointed, it will be God himself. However, take his spear, take his canteen, and let's go. And so, we begin in verse 13. David went over to the other side, stood far off on the top of the hill with a great space between them. He wants to make sure he's got a good head start and that the terrain is in his favor should Saul's men decide to pursue him after this. So David then called to the army, wakes them up. Remember, it's night. And he called specifically to the commander of the army under Saul, Saul's cousin, Abner. To Abner, the son of Ner, saying, will you not answer, Abner? Maybe Abner was having a hard time coming up out of that supernatural drowsiness. And so David's kind of rousing him a little bit more. Then Abner answered, who are you who calls to the king? And David said to Abner, are you not a man? Who is like you in Israel? And David would know because David has worked with and under Commander Ner for a good decade, more than that, ever since he became a military member of Saul's army after the killing of Goliath. And so he says, who's like you in Israel? So why then have you not kept watch over your lord the king? For one of the people came in to destroy the king, your lord. This thing that you have done is not good. As he who is lives, you deserve to die because you've not kept watch over your lord, he who is his anointed. Now, see where the king's spear is and the jar of water that was at his head. Now, I get a little bit of impression here that David is kind of irritated with Abner as the possibility of one of the ones that keeps egging Saul on to track down David and kill him. I don't know if that's the case, but it does seem like David goes out of his way to poke at Abner of letting anyone get this close to the king. And he's right. If you're on guard duty, if you're on protective detail around the king, and you let somebody get through to kill them, then that's a capital crime. Verse number 17. We don't hear what Abner has to say back. Only hear Saul. Saul recognized David's voice. Remember, it's night. It's pitch black except for the stars, maybe a little bit of moon. Is this your voice, my son David? And David said, it is my voice, my lord, O king. And then he said, why does my lord pursue after his servant? What have I done? What evil is there on my hands? This is David's complaint in some of his psalms during this time period as well, that people are lying to Saul. that Saul's own mind is lying to him, that David is not a threat. Now, therefore, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If it is he who has stirred you up against me, may he accept an offering. Now, he doesn't believe that God's doing this. This is just an opening offer. If God's really the one that wants you to come after me, then maybe I can repent and offer an appropriate sacrifice. But not that being the case, if it is men, may they be cursed before he who is. Imprecatory psalms, remember, are generated during this period by David asking for God to judge and condemn those who are lying about him. And here's one of his heartfelt reasons for that. Actually, two of his heartfelt reasons. For they have driven me out this day, that I have no share in the inheritance of he who is saying, go serve other gods. So David is not able to reside in peace in his own country. I mean, even if they wanted him to get out of the army, he couldn't go back to Bethlehem now because he's on the run. So he couldn't go and live in his own inheritance. But more significant, he can't go to worship services. He can't go to the tabernacle. He can't go to the other high places. And so he says, it's as if you guys are telling me, go be a pagan. Go be a Canaanite. Serve other gods and goddesses. You can't have he who is. Verse 20. Now, therefore, let not my blood fall to the earth away from the presence of he who is. So don't make me die out here separated from my country, from my family, from my God and the worship of him. And then he repeats some imagery like what he used the last time he spared Saul's life. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a single flea, like one who hunts a partridge in the mountains. Remember the last time he said, What am I to you? I'm nothing but a flea on a dead dog. Why are you chasing me? I am no threat. And so he repeats that idea. Then Saul said, I have sinned. So he acknowledges, he confesses verbally. Unfortunately, his heart does not follow very long on this. Return, my son David, for I will no more do you harm, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Behold, I have acted foolishly and have made a great mistake. So in just this moment, he sees clearly with the eyes of his mind, the eyes of his heart, that David had clear opportunities to slice his throat, and he didn't do it. So obviously David is not out to kill him and to take the kingdom. And so he acknowledges it in this moment. Verse 22, David answered and said, here's the spear, O king. Let one of the young men come over and take it. So I'm going to return your personal weapon back to you. Have one of your younger guys come over, no doubt unarmed. He who is rewards every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. For he who is gave you into my hand today, and I would not put out my hand against he who is his anointed. So just reinforcing, God clearly gave me the chance to slit your throat, but I am not going to do that because you are carrying on your head the anointing oil of God. It is not my responsibility to take you out. Behold, as your life was precious this day in my sight, so may my life be precious in the sight of he who is, and may he deliver me out of all tribulation. So a little prayer request to God. And then Saul said to David, blessed be you, my son David. You will do many things and will succeed in them. So just like the last time, he acknowledges that David has a very good future ahead of him as king, even though it won't be much longer and he'll be probably very angry with David again because of the lies that will be told to him. And so this event finishes. David went his way. Saul returned to his place. And it was most likely that we would have had another episode of Saul chasing David, trying to kill him because of the prompting of the demonic oppression in his life, because of the prompting of the lies among some of the people in his group that hate David. But David decides he's got to take better precautions, because just moving around in the wilderness on the east and south side of Hebron is not going to cut it. Chapter 27, then David said in his heart, now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. In his faithfulness, I think he knows that God's not going to let that happen. But he expresses this in his frustration of the moment, that Saul's just not going to leave him alone. He keeps making these promises that he'll leave him alone, but he won't. So David says, it's going to end up with me dead if I don't take some different action this time. There is nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand. So David comes to the conclusion, after months of running around in Judea, in the wilderness regions of Judea, with Saul hot on his heels, that he should just go into Philistine territory, into Philistine strongly held territory, and hang out there until Saul is no longer king. Because Saul is not likely to mount a full-scale invasion of Philistine territory just to kill David. Verse number 2. So David arose, he went over, he and the 600 men who were with him. So this is another time that we hear how many fighters he has with him on a regular basis. Now those men, many of them are bringing their families along with them. And so he effectively defects to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. Now I want you to understand, it is likely that this Achish was well acquainted with Goliath. If Achish is a young man, as I suspect, then he certainly would have probably looked up to Goliath, literally and figuratively, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Let's see, this is probably the 18th year of Saul's kingdom, and so David killed Goliath probably in the third. So we're talking about 15 years ago. So Achish is probably well acquainted with Goliath and the story of David killing him. And David probably appeals for refugee status, for asylum, based on the idea, I am a strong fighter. I am going to be the king of Israel one of these days and be your nearest neighbor. And if you let me hang out here, then that will be kept in mind. That's more than likely what David offered. And Achish agrees. So David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, both of them brand new wives, because Michal, who helped him escape at the beginning of this whole story, has been forcibly divorced by her dad from David and remarried, at least re-promised to be remarried. So David has remarried himself to two women, Ahinoam of Jezreel. That's not Jezreel up in the north. That's Jezreel in Judea, off to the south or east of Hebron somewhere probably. And then Abigail of Carmel from the same general vicinity, Nabal's widow. And remember that story. So David is now a protected person at the city-state of Gath. So verse 4, when it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, he no longer sought him. So he just gave up on it. Now, here's the arrangements made. David said to Achish, if I found favor in your eyes, let a place be given to me in one of the country towns, that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? So David says, King Achish, I have no reason to be occupying the capital city of Gath of your kingdom. Would you please designate a refugee city out in the Netherlands, out in the wilderness region of your territory, off to the south, and I'll go live there. I'll take my men with me, and that's where we will carry on our operations. So that day, Achish gave him Ziklag. Nobody knows exactly where Ziklag is, but we do understand that it is south from Gath, which we know where that's at, in the Negev, in the wilderness region. Therefore, Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day, because David spends time there. The number of the days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. So this helps us to understand the timing of all these events happening within probably about a 2-year range. That's why I placed it right around the 18th year of 20 years of King Saul's reign. Verse 8. Now David and his men went up, and they made raids against the Geshurites and the Gerizzites and the Amalekites. For these were the inhabitants of the land from of old, as far as Shur to the land of Egypt. So on the south border of the Promised Land, on the south border of Judea and Simeonite territory, there are these tribes, the Gershites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. And they are troublemakers. They are raiders. They are gang members. The Amalekites in particular, we know, are slave traders. They are big into kidnapping and then human trafficking people that they have captured in those raids. So David decides that while he's down here in the extreme south of the Gath territory, he'll just jump down into those border regions of Simeon and of Judah and take care of Israel's problems. I mean, he can't openly attack the Philistines very easily, but he can take care of other people in the same general vicinity. Verse 9. David would strike the land and would leave neither man nor woman alive, but would take away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, the garments. And then he'd come back to Achish. Now, Achish would get a cut of this because David is acting like a raider. And the Philistines feel like he's their raider. So they take a little cut of this. When Achish asked, where have you made a raid today? David would say, oh, I went against the Negev of Judah and against the Negev of the Jerahmeelites, or I went against the Negev of the Kenites. So these These three people groups are those associated with Israel. So yes, David is lying here. He is carrying on a covert military operation against Israel's enemies while telling Achish of Gath that he's carrying out fights against Israelis and their allies. Verse 11, David would leave neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, thinking lest they tell about us and say, so David is done. Such was his custom all the while he lived in the country of the Philistines. So this happened for about a year, 4 months, almost a year and a half. And because he's doing this, and Achish believes that he is attacking Israelis, Achish trusted David, thinking he has made himself an utter stench to his people Israel, therefore he shall always be my servant. So the relationship might have started out with David saying, I'm going to be the next king in Israel, and if you give me some sort of status here, then I'll keep that in mind. The fact that he is attacking what appears to be Israeli places, he thinks he's going native with the Philistines, that he's just going to be a Philistine tool for the rest of his life. How wrong he is. Now, something else happens here that is reported in another book. So I want you to go over to 1 Chronicles, chapter number 12, and it's one of those name lists that show up in the book of Chronicles quite a bit in the front. We're not going to read every little name, but we will read some significant ones. Chapter 12 of 1 Chronicles says, now these are the men who came to David at Ziklag while he could not move about freely because of Saul the son of Kish. They were among the mighty men who helped him in war. They were bowmen and could shoot arrows and sling stones with either the right or the left hand. They were Benjamites, Saul's kinsmen. So this is where we find out that at least some of the 600 men that are with David at Ziklag are Benjamites, ambidextrous Benjamites, which is really funny because we know there's a high incident rate of left-handedness in the Benjamite genome, even though their name literally means son of the right hand. But these guys hate Saul's kingship. They see him as a tyrant. And so they throw in their lot with David. The chief was Ahiezer. And then you have Joash, and both of these were sons of Shammah of Gibeah. That's the hometown of King Saul. That's where the capital city is. And then you have a big, long list of names. You've got Ismaiah of Gibeon. He was a mighty man among the 30 and a leader over the 30. We'll talk about the 30 later in David's kingdom. And then more names show up here. Skipping down, I want you to go to verse 16. There's other things that are happening during David's run that are mentioned here. But I want you to look at verse 16. Some of the men of Benjamin and Judah came to the stronghold to David, and David went and met them and said to them, if you've come to me in friendship to help me, my heart will be joined to you. But if to betray me to my adversaries, although there is no wrong in my hands, then may the God of our fathers see and rebuke you. So David is meeting some of these guys that are listed here in this section, showing up to support David. Verse 15 actually told us that some of them came over at the beginning of a year, in the first month, when it was a flood stage for the Jordan. But these guys are coming to David in Philistine territory. And David says, I'm telling you right now at the very beginning, if you are here to help me out as a true friend, then God bless you. But if it turns out that you're one of the people who have been lying about me, and that the only reason you're here is to try to take advantage of me and kill me or turn me over to King Saul, then may the curse of God be put on you. I'll sing a song against you. And then we have this interesting response. Then the Spirit clothed Amasai, and we will learn more about Amasai later. He is actually related to David, but he is going to end up being David's commander of the armies eventually. So the Spirit clothed Amasai, chief of the 30, and he said, "We are yours, O David. We are with you, O son of Jesse. Peace, peace to you, peace to your helpers, for your God helps you." And so David received them and made them officers in his troops. And so David is making his army bigger during some of the time that he's on the run, but he's really settled down there in Philistia at this point. This brings us then to the climactic part of this story of Saul's later kingdom. The story which will culminate in King Saul being killed in the Battle of Gilboa. And so I want you to go ahead and mark your place in 1 Samuel chapter 28. If you have the opportunity, if you have the appetite for it, do a little bit of reading ahead to prepare yourself for the next time we get into God's inspired word.